But at the time Peter Kropotkin was writing, particularly in the wake of the horror of the reaction of the tiny few who were able to incite the property owners of Paris. Given where he was at that moment, he of course could not see otherwise than that conflict could very likely, or would even likely mean some level of conflict that could either be kept minimal, the reaction, or watched blow up exponentially. And his objective was to so prepare us, so prepare our thoughts, that we could make sure the transition was as peaceful as possible. So he says, the question is then not so much how to avoid revolutions as how to attain the greatest results from the most limited amount of civil war, the smallest number of victims, and a minimum of mutual embitterment. For that end, there is only one means, namely, that the oppressed part of society should obtain the clearest possible conception of what they intend to achieve and how, and that they should be imbued with the enthusiasm which is necessary for that achievement. In that case, they will be sure to attach to their cause the best and the freshest intellectual forces of the privileged class. And we all know that that is true. We've all seen that too. Peter being perhaps the best example, huh? Continuing. The Commune of Paris. The Commune of Paris was a terrible example of an outbreak with insufficiently determined ideals. When the workers became, in March 1871, the masters of the great city, they did not attack the property rights vested in the middle classes. On the contrary, they took these rights under their protection. The leaders of the commune covered the national bank with their bodies. And notwithstanding the crisis which had paralyzed industry and the consequent absence of earnings for a mass of workers, they protected the rights of the owners of the factories, the trade establishments, and the dwelling houses of Paris with their decrees. However, when the movement was crushed, no account was taken by the middle classes of the modesty of the communalistic claims of the insurgents. Having lived for 2 months in fear that the workers would make an assault upon their property rights, the rich men of France took upon them just the same revenge as if they had made the assault in reality. Nearly 30,000 were slaughtered, as is known, not in battle, but after they had lost the battle. If they had taken steps toward the socialization of property, the revenge could not have been more terrible. If, then, my conclusion was, there are periods in human development when a conflict is unavoidable, let these conflicts take place not on the ground of vague aspirations, but upon definite issues, like the ownership of our bodies, not upon secondary points, but upon broad ideas which inspire men by the grandness of the horizon which they bring into view. In this last case, the conflict itself will depend much less upon the efficacy of firearms and guns than upon the force of the creative genius which will be brought into action in the work of reconstruction of society. It will depend chiefly upon the constructive forces of society taking for the moment a free course, upon the inspirations being of a higher standard and so winning more sympathy, even from those who, as a class, are opposed to the change. The conflict, being thus engaged on larger issues, will purify the social atmosphere itself, unquote. Will purify the social atmosphere itself. With these ideas, I returned to Russia, unquote, from Peter Kropotkin's Memoirs of a Revolutionist, which he wrote around 1898. The chief difficulty we face is not one of an overwhelming disproportion in resources between we, the 99.999%, and the tiny 10,000, but rather one of an overwhelming certainty disproportion between us and the tiny 10. And this because they have kept us busy working, surviving, and so unable to develop our thought. The tiny 10,000 know, have known for 2.5 centuries what they want. Their own rule fixed in place. We beat down and captured by our given ranks, and this as a global fixity. Their position continuously fed by young people bred to ensure their supremacy is never questioned ad infinitum. The chief difficulty we face is that the power guys plan, they organize, they act in concert, act, attack, in secret, they keep themselves hidden. And they reinforce with each other a sense of legitimacy, and they control our thoughts with the propaganda and the education system, committing acts which an independent judgment would see as heinous. And existing trends suggest that that certainty disproportion will only get worse if we don't get busy. There is a noose called economic hardship around the necks of we hard-pressed to exist that is progressively tightening, and the escalating debt that comes from it increasingly constricts our options as the interest accumulates in their pockets. Our ability to achieve the freedom we long to see and leave for the children will not get any easier with more time passing. What the spirit of freedom needed, the missing structural supports in our successful strategy, was its solid ethical basis. Our claim is not based on scientific legitimacy. It is based on what we have always known, our right to be free. In our hearts, we know this, that our gifts do not exist to be marketed. Its solid ethical basis, its global range, and the technological backbone, thank you, Nicola, needed to support global decentralization, an instantaneous electronic communications network available now for us to realize our ancestors' dreams and our own. It is imperative that our love, our tenderness, live in this time of transition, that we organize our core selves, our open tribesmanship, to reinforce and realize it.